Hello again and welcome back. This week's long budget standoff in Illinois is having an increasing and far-reaching impact across the state. We wondered about progress in resolving the crisis, how East St. Louis is faring, and what its prospects are as the budget crisis continues. Joining me to talk about it are Amanda Vinicky, the State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. Elizabeth Patton Whiteside is the Public Health Administrator for the East Side Health District. It's highly dependent on state funding. Bill Krieb is president and CEO of the Leslie Bates Davis Neighborhood House, a faith-based organization. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Amanda, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Amanda, I'd like to start with you and kind of give us thumbnail version, the Cliff Notes version of how we got where we are with this whole impasse in the budget.
Well, we're talking on a bit of a hallmark day. It is officially 100 days since Illinois has been without a budget. The impasse predates that, however. What you really have is Governor Bruce Rauner, and he has said that he wants to make Illinois more competitive. That's part of what he campaigned on, though it was only after he actually became governor that we really learned what that meant. And he says that's five demands is what he's narrowed it down to. A couple of those have to do with the legislature, term limits, and change in how districts are drawn. But the others are, he says, again, to make the state more competitive, and that has to do with workers' compensation and lawsuits, making that system more business-friendly when it comes to torts, and also a freeze on property taxes, but he says that has to be paired with something that makes municipalities be able to save money, namely by narrowing collective bargaining. He says this is all reasonable. Democrats have been fighting that and say it will lead to a worse wages, hurt the middle class, etc. They're saying no to all of this. So that's the standoff. You might think, what does that really have to do with the budget? The governor says it is related because all of these things have been linked to what's gone wrong in Illinois in the past, and it's a long-term agenda, and the only way that he'll be able to get it through is if they agree to these demands. Basically, he's using the budget as a negotiating tool. Democrats say, enough of that, and we have compromised. They both say they're compromising. Neither seems to think the other side is, but they are not going along with any of these elements, and that's why you have a budget impasse.
And the Democrats, of course, control the legislature.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
But he has
the supermajority.
But he has the veto pen.
He has the veto pen. So the Democrats did pass a budget. It's not as if there was no attempt to have one. Democrats passed it, but even they admit it. It was out of balance. It was sort of their sign, hey, we need to raise taxes or do something about revenue. The governor vetoed that. You're now having some Republicans say, because Illinois is continuing to spend despite having a budget, that's kind of another odd anomaly that's going on here. People thought that the state would shut down without a budget. Instead, we have a bunch of court orders that require certain expenses to be paid. So you're having kind of selective harm going on right now. And you're having, because of all these court orders, actually the state spending more than it's expected to take in. So in addition to not having a budget, we're also on the road to a deficit.
And what is some of that selective harm that has taken place on the broad basis, the statewide basis?
It's really all over the place. You have public universities that haven't received any money from the state since July. They say that's going to be a problem come second semester. And when it comes for it to MAP grants, those are basically tuition dollars that help low-income kids be able to go to school. Even some thought that some universities won't have the lights on. Same goes for the Secretary of State's office. They've stopped sending already reminders via mail that people's vehicle registration stickers are going to run out. They've also said this might lead to literally turning out the lights or us being kicked out of DMV facilities. The treasurer's office says pretty soon they're going to have to dip into investment funds for pensions. That's going to raise costs in the long term. Will it lead to more trash because a DCEO, that's the Commerce Department, recycling program is going under? 911 call centers. Really, everywhere you look, there is some sort of impact.
We're going to be talking with some people in studio here about how they're feeling the impact in just a moment. And Amanda, stay with us, if you will,
okay.
So you can be a part of this conversation as well. Elizabeth Patton Whiteside, none of what Amanda has said is a surprise to you. You've been living through this.
Yes, we are currently living through everything that she has stated. And this impasse has greatly affected the public health system within the state of Illinois. I'm just one of 97 local health departments within the state, and we're not being paid either, other than this when they pass the federal pass-through money. That's the only money that we're getting.
So how has it basically impacted your service? People aren't getting paid. That's that's bad enough, but there are other ramifications as well.
You know, there's such a thing as the local public health grant. That is what covers the basic core functions of the health department. We're not receiving any payment for that. And that's your environmental health, where we go out and do the restaurant inspections, the communicable disease sections, the potable water, all of that. Any day an outbreak can occur, and you're not going to have the public health agencies available to come to the rescue.
Do you have a message for Governor Rauner?
Pass the budget. Stop playing and pass the budget. At least pass things that will affect the public health part of it.
Right. Amanda, do you want to pass that message along?
Well, I don't know if I need to pass that along. I will say that it is interesting, however, the governor had a speech yesterday where he talked about a lot of this, and he said it's outrageous. He doesn't like it. He doesn't want all of this stuff to happen. But what, of course, Democrats would respond to that, it didn't have to. You were the one who vetoed the budget. It's really a game of pointing fingers and a game it's been phrased as, you know, all of the agencies like the public health departments are the hostages in this situation, and neither side is backing down. So whereas some people say, Governor, agree, give up on your demands, sign a budget, we need it, the governor is saying, hey, I'm asking for what he calls easy and common sense compromises. Plenty of people, of course, dispute that, but if Democrats want a budget so bad, or if the pain is that difficult, agree with me and you'll have a budget. And he's saying that he's willing to do something that is difficult for a lot of Republicans to swallow, and that would be increased taxes in order to pay for all of this.
Is there
that's where you have really the impasse. It's tough. Right. Nobody's showing any signs of backing down.
Is there any consensus as to which side may be more to blame for this than the other?
I think it really depends on who you talk to, and each side would say the other side is responsible. I mean, Democrats did pass a budget. The governor didn't have to veto it outright, with the exception of schools, of course. He did sign the education bill. He could have instead brought that budget down to the revenue Illinois was taking in. It then would have been his call on a lot of these cuts. He would have perhaps, you know, been the one to blame for all of that. And so that said, is it the Democrats' fault? They admit they passed an out-of-balance budget. Who does that? How is that happening? They do have supermajorities, and therefore, technically, the numbers, it, of course, is more difficult for them to actually get all of those supermajority of members to vote for a tax increase that would be able to pay for the spending that they're calling for. But Rauner says they have the votes. So I think there's plenty of blame really to spread around.
Plenty to go around. Bill Kreeb, let me turn to you now and ask the same question I asked of Elizabeth with regard to how all this is impacting your operation over there at the Leslie Bates Davis Neighborhood House.
Well, Neighborhood House provides a broad range of human and social services, and it's having a devastating impact on thousands of children and families, both in the greater East St. Louis, St. Clair County, Madison County area, as well as throughout the state. And what's really sad is that most of the state has approved all of these contracts for human services and social services. We have signed contracts, but we haven't gotten paid a dime since July 1st. But a lot of our agencies have continued to provide services for children and youth and families. And our feeling is, you know, if the state workers, 65,000 state workers are being paid, you know, we certainly should be paid too. We have contracts, we have agreements. You know, our agencies, Neighborhood House has been around 100 years, and agencies like, you know, Children's Home and Aid Society, you know, Horton Youth and Family, the Neighborhood House, you know, we're providing critically needed services, and yet we're not being paid for them. So, for example, like our child care program, as a result of the budget impasse, more than 1,100 kids just in the greater East St. Louis community are not able to enroll their children into needed child care. And it's kind of a bad situation, because he did pass the educational budget for kids K through 12, but he drastically reduced the eligibility level for parents. So, for example, we have a contract with the state to help parents get jobs and get job training. We did this during June and July, had all these parents ready to go to work. But then when the budget impasse happened and when he changed the eligibility criteria, our parents, who were only going to be making minimum wage, like, you know, $8.25 an hour, were over income. He reduced it from 150% to 50% of the eligibility of the federal poverty level. And so, you know, it's had a devastating impact on our kids.
Well,
that's something, if I could quick interject here, that actually that was a temporary emergency rule that the governor used to get a change in those standards. There is now an effort by the administration to make those permanent. So, of course, nothing is really permanent in government, but regardless, that's part of the budget situation, but beyond that as well. It seems like that's something that the governor wants to have in place, even if Illinois were to have a budget. And again, I've got to point out there's no indication that that will be happening anytime soon.
I've heard it may not be until March.
You know, it's really hard to put a date, but I would say that there is widespread belief that it, at the very least, will not happen in this calendar year for a couple of reasons. Namely, that right now politicians are going around getting signatures to run for re-election. They're trying to figure out if they're going to have primary opponents. Of course, the governor and some of the related PACs have a whole lot of money that they're supposed to be using to recruit new candidates to further, quote-unquote, shake up Springfield and the system. So politicians are playing it pretty safe. They're not expected to take difficult votes while they're beginning this first phase of their reelection efforts. Further, it takes additional votes to get anything passed that would take effect immediately. So if they wait until the new year, you would need fewer votes to do anything like pass a budget, pass a tax hike, even pass cuts, any of those things. So there are a couple of reasons that we at the very least think 2016, but again, that would, beyond that, it would take some sort of compromise between Republicans and Democrats, and they're not really even meeting. So that's going to be a first step.
Elizabeth, you're shaking your head.
I am. This is just so frustrating because we're on the front line having to provide services with no pay. As Bill has said, they've had us sign contracts that stipulates that we will be paid with no money. Right now I'm running a month-to-month budget. If my health department should close, who's going to provide the services for the people? It seems like the common citizens are the ones who are really left out in this whole shenanigans.
How are you compensating for the shortfall? I mean, obviously, you still have to do whatever you can do. What are you doing?
I have laid off most of my staff. We're working with just a minimal crew. I'm not seeing the total amount of clients that I'm supposed to see. And we're just, you know, in the old school, you rob Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the politicians better watch out because the people who are being laid off are also voters.
They are their voters, and they are upset.
Bill, how are you compensating? You know, there's a school strike, as you well know, going on over there, which means a lot of kids are out and about, and kids are your business.
Well, that's a great point. One of the programs that the state cut was the Teen Reach program. There were about 100 of these programs serving about 15,000 kids around the state. That program has been eliminated. We were fortunate that we are a United Way agency, and so through our funding through United Way and the United Methodist Church, we've been able to keep it going for right now. We've actually even increased it from our regular hours of 3 to 6. Now we're open at 12 because of the school strike. But so we've compensated right now. But like all of our staff have taken a 20% reduction in pay. We've laid off quite a few staff. And within the next 30 days, it's estimated in the state that there could be as many as 50 to 75 agencies closing. People had reserves. Most non-for-profits have reserves. They've used those reserves for July, August, and September. And now things are going to get really, really bad if a budget isn't passed.
Well, and as Amanda just said, and as a lot of the news reports have it, 2016 is probably the earliest we can look for some resolution to this.
Yeah, no, it's having a devastating impact, especially on seniors. Amanda, I think, mentioned that it's selective suffering on the part of a lot of people. For example, our community care program, we're getting paid for those seniors who who are on Medicaid, but there's 50% of our seniors who are not, but they're still very low-income individuals who are blind, handicapped, or disabled, you know, where our staff go in every day and do, you know, really basic things like cooking. And without our staff going in there, these people are going to be forced to go in a nursing home. And so, you know, it's really have a devastating impact on those individuals.
Elizabeth, what other services are you seeing in East St. Louis and the general metro east area that have been most impacted by this?
Well, of course, I could talk about our school-based health centers. Even though District 189 is on strike, Cahokia School District is not. And the school-based health centers that we had in the schools are all closed at this point. So you've given money for the schools to stay open, but then the kids need their physicals, their dental, and all of that in order to meet the requirements of the state. They're not getting them. So then they're going to be put out of school. They can't come to the health district to get that done because you're not paying us to stay open to do it. And then even though we have the WIC, and everybody knows about WIC for Women's, Infants, and Children's mm-hmm. program, there's other programs that go along with that, such as case management to keep the young ladies in school, pregnancy prevention, and all of that. None of that's being done.
And, of course, when you put a lot of kids out on the street,
you're
looking for a big time trouble.
Yeah.
People are talking about that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We're all scared.
You know what?
I mean, there's also mental health funding that
yes.
is a problem, drug yeah. treatment funding, and
domestic
I think
violence
there are some people,
centers
right.
have been closed.
Yeah.
And people are almost waiting for a crisis and wondering if that will move things, because right now you hear a lot of these stories and it's disparate, it's fractured. And for people that don't depend on those services, it sounds bad, but they aren't really hit smack in the face with the reality of what it is that government does, what it's supposed to do, and what it should be doing, really. And so there is some thought that maybe one of these situations is going to lead to something terrible happening, or will the state actually run out of money? Will state employees no longer be paid, or will there not be money to send to schools despite there being an education budget? Will a court need to intervene in that regard? So there is all of these questions, because this is really unprecedented. Illinois has gone without a budget before. All states, of course, have their battles, and this is the first time in a dozen years that Illinois has had a Republican in there. Everyone knew there was going to be some sort of change, and yet to go 100 days without a budget with no end in sight is the part that everybody's really unsure. How does it end? When does it end? What will make it end? And how long can this go on?
Well, Amanda, let me just say that from a public health standpoint, it's only a matter of time until there's a disease outbreak. And that's going to leave many people sick and may even cause some people to lose their lives. And an outbreak like this is what we prevent. Without public health, we're in trouble.
Right, flu season's coming up, just for starters. Right. That's right on top of Amanda, very quickly, you've only got a little bit over a minute left. What happens when it does end? I mean, is suddenly there going to be this rush of money and that people who have been denied it, are they going to get it?
There will not be an immediate rush of money. I would expect whatever happens. Again, there's a lot of talk about the need for some sort of revenue increase. Frankly, now on both sides of the aisle, there's, of course, a lot of voters that will, I think, look at their government and say, the sort of job you've done, why should I be giving more of my hard-earned paycheck to this state government when it's in shambles? Regardless of what happens with that, if there is a tax increase, that, of course, takes time to implement. And the longer that Illinois has gone on without it and with these court decrees going out and so spending flying out of state government without really the intent that a budget is supposed to be there for, the harder it is to make those decisions. So even after that, there will still be pain and some really tough choices.
Very, very quickly. I've only got a few seconds left. Bill, a final thought very quickly.
I would just ask that the legislature and the governor get together and please don't, you know, balance the budget on the backs of the poor in our community.
Elizabeth?
I concur with Bill.
Right. Well, we'll leave it at that and hope that people are listening to the message that is being sent from the studio today. Amanda Vinicky, thank you so much for being with us.
But, of course, thank you.
Amanda's the State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. Elizabeth Patton-Whiteside with us, Public Health Administrator for the Eastside Health District. Bill Kreeb, President and CEO of the Leslie Bates Davis Neighborhood House. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
This ends for you soon. We'll ask folks to join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, and he'll talk with jazz pianist Peter Martin about his new CD and a concert featuring music from it. He'll also take a look at a concert by the St. Louis Women's Hope Chorale featuring 442's Aaron Bodie and a world premiere by Adam Manis. And he'll speak with native Irish singer Maxine Linehan about her appearance on the Gaslight Cabaret Festival. Monday on St. Louis On the Air, we'll talk about legal issues with our Legal Roundtable panel. Archived versions of St. Louis On the Air available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Thanks to producers Barry Edwards, Alex Hoyer, Kelly Moffitt, Anya O'Connor, Aaron Dorr, and Spencer Reed. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.